week, Crust Piermont can deliver up to 150 hot, fresh, gourmet pizzas to the CBD. Welcome autumn with our new Creole Jambalaya Pizza and new low-carb pizzas. We have something for everyone. Order now at crust.com.au or call 9566-1933. Crust Gourmet Pizza Bar Piermont sponsors 2SCR 107.3.
2SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
Tan caliente ahora!
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Good morning and welcome to So Hot Right Now, Arts and Culture for your Saturday morning. I'm Sam Barron, filling in for Sophie Lai this weekend. This morning we're going to be having our gaggle of geeks around, explore what happened with the Oscars last week. I actually saw Shape of Water myself last weekend and very much enjoyed it, so I think a well-deserved, you know, best picture there. Plus a film project with roots sunk deep into 15th century literature and feminism, as well as Black Artist Connection, a collaboration inviting early career first persons to develop their creative and professional skills. But to take you there, this is Echoes and Avery from Jane Tyrrell on 2SER.
In the throes of dust above my head, in the wreckage of these thoughts, see me climbing up a thousand stairs. In the absence of reason, weighed upon the shoulders and these bones, 50 pounds of standing stone. Not getting any closer. Ooh, what I do to get this over, this over, over.
What is enough without a word? Bottles in the ocean.
Cultures is celebrating its 10th year as Australia's largest African festival on Saturday, March 10 at Wyatt Park, Lidcombe. Immerse yourself in the vibrant culture, music and delicious food from these vibrant countries. Enjoy two stages of live dance and music, shop the African marketplace, sign up to a style workshop, or try some of the 14 different cuisines in the Nile food court, plus much more. Visit africultures.com.au for more information. 2SER is a proud media partner of Africultures Festival.
This is So Hot Right Now in 2SER this morning. I'm Sam Barron, taking you through arts and culture. And on the high spirits following International Women's Day, Antidote, an online platform, is about to launch their first ever exhibition in mid-March, so mid this month. Antidote celebrates the intersectionality between art and social change, and one of their film projects, The City of Ladies, will have you 5 foot deep in films, feminism, and 15th century literature. I'm joined now by co-curator and artist Zanny Begg to talk about City of Ladies. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Zanny, are you there? Okay, we seem to have dropped Zanny for the moment. I will come back to you in just a moment.
This week on 2SER, we've got a sweet tooth for Coco Sugar, the new album from Scottish trio Young Fathers. Tell your deity I'm alright. Wake up in the bed, call me Jesus Christ. Raising hell with their uncompromising and experimental hip hop, we're going back for spoonfuls. 2SER listeners can win copies. Coco Sugar by Young Fathers, the feature album on 2SER 107.3. Stories, ideas, music.
I'm chasing shadows in the gallows, collecting what. And we're joined now by Zanny. Zanny, how are you going?
I'm pretty good.
Excellent. Great. So your project, City of Ladies, is based on Christine de Pizan's novel. What is that novel actually about?
It is quite an amazing book. It was written in 1402, which is incredible in and of itself. And it's considered one of the first Western feminist texts. And it's a feminist utopia where she imagines a city built, governed, and populated by women.
And so have you just taken this idea and how have you incorporated this into your show?
Well, we were really fascinated by this book because it was such an early imagining of a feminist future. And 600 years later, sadly, many of those issues that she writes about are unresolved. So we thought we'd kind of work with it across time. So our film isn't in 1402. It's not a period piece. It's set in contemporary society. But we kind of use some of the text directly from that medieval period because it still speaks to some of the issues that we're grappling with around misogyny and the way women are treated.
And your film Antidote, which is based off of this, City of Ladies, based off the book, it's described as a non-linear film. How did you come up with this non-linear? Why did you choose to tell it in this fashion?
Well, I guess a lot of the kind of teleologies in our society are structured around this idea of this kind of progression and rationality and all that sort of stuff. But because of misogyny, we've kind of got a very masculine way of thinking about our history. And it's almost like we can't imagine what it would be like if all the women's stories had been told along the way because they've been so marginalized in how history has been treated. So what we wanted to do was to create a different time. So we have a lot of material which is randomly compiled. So every 20 minutes for each viewing is different. So one person may go in and see a film and it's about one particular topic, and another person would go in and see a film and it'd be on a completely different topic, and they'd have coffee later and they'd seen different films, even though it's the one work. And that kind of flexibility and that randomization, I think, allows a sort of multiplicity of how we understand feminism. So instead of kind of boxing into one linear view of feminism, what we're looking at more is a feminisms.
So you're saying that the work actually is changing from viewing to viewing, or it's just being arranged in a different fashion each time?
Well, we have an algorithm that randomly generates over 300,000 different versions of the work. So we have a certain set number of files, but they compile differently each time. For this particular showing in Trace, which has been put together by Antidote, we're doing a looped version of that because it's a little bit more of a smaller version than the full version that was shown at the MCA. And what that means is just that six or so random selections of the material have been pumped out, and we're putting them in the show and we're playing them on a loop. In its fuller version, which is, you know, in a larger show, there will be over 300,000 variations, and every one will be different for, you know, 3 months or a long period of time.
It's a really interesting dynamic way to put it together. And you created this work in collaboration with a Paris-based Australian director, Elise McLeod, as well as a bunch of young activists and feminists. How was that experience of collaboration?
Oh, it was so amazing. And Elise was one of my best friends when I was growing up. And so, you know, we were really super close when we were about 14. And she's lived in Paris for about 20 years. So, you know, we haven't been able to spend that much time with each other. But I was really lucky to get the Cité residency through the Power Institute. And so we sort of reunited to make this film together. And we have a shared interest in feminism and film. So we decided that, well, let's just make a film about feminism, and we picked this text because it was written in Paris, and it seemed a really nice moment to kind of, you know, we were making the film just before Trump got elected, but there was this feeling of, you know, and before the Me Too kind of movement erupted, but there was this feeling of this disgust at misogyny, and this feeling like an end game for patriarchy, that there's just so much that women have suffered. And so we kind of wanted to sort of capture that moment and make this film that responded to those sort of lens, I guess, of Paris.
Right. And so with, again, just going back a bit to the non-linear form of the film, and so you get people getting together in cafes afterwards to discuss it, we'll have different experiences. Is this, again, is this mostly about sort of like the way that feminism is a individual experience and not so much like one set global, you know, idea that people often take it to be?
Yeah, I mean, we tell a lot of the feminism through stories, and because the City of Ladies is a collection of stories of amazing women, and Christine de Bazan herself was quite an amazing woman. For a period of time, she transitioned to be a man, and she writes about that in great detail, about how her voice changes and her body changes, and then she comes back to being a woman again. And I think that was a really important, like, one of the stories deals with issues of gender, and I guess a gender diverse or a post-gender society, what that might be like. But then she was also the only person in France who defended Jeanne d'Arc at the time of her trial. Now she's like a hero and a symbol of, you know, everything French. But back when she was burnt for being a witch, the French court turned their back on her, and Christine Bazan wrote a poem saying history will belong to Jeanne d'Arc, which it sort of has. So there's kind of a thread of that story, which connects with the gender story, because, you know, Jeanne d'Arc was obviously burnt for wearing men's clothing, and is considered an early sort of transgender activist by some people. So, you know, the stories interconnect, but they kind of have these different threads that weave through. Another thread is, you know, obviously France, like Australia, is grappling with its post-colonial or decolonization, it's grappling with empire and what that means in a contemporary context. So we had, you know, stories that looked at relationships with Algeria, Tunisia, Cambodia, and that sort of migrant population in France, and the sort of tensions over, I guess, justice, you know, with France's history.
Yeah.
So it's all
wrapped up in history and culture and the whole movement.
Yeah, I guess so. And it comes together with the Nuit Debout movement, which was this beautiful, beautiful, poetic, very French response, where after the terrorist attacks happened, and there was this whole clampdown in public space, and you had, like, soldiers with machine guns everywhere in Paris. Young people gathered in the Place de la République, which is the centre of Paris, at nightfall, in their thousands, and just sat down and talked to each other. And it was just this beautiful way of claiming that space and trying to create trust in public space, where the response to terrorism has been one of fear. And so we set the whole film based in that square and with activists from that movement.
Okay, well, it sounds like a really fantastic project. Thank you so much for joining us this morning to let us know about it, and hopefully look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, well, I hope everyone goes and checks out the exhibition. It opens next Wednesday night.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Zanny.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
And that was Zanny Begg, an artist chatting about Antidotes, the City of Ladies installation, which is based off a 15th century book, so 600 years later now. The exhibition is going to be showing from the 14th to the 25th of March, so from next Wednesday to the 25th of March at Wellington Street Projects. And, of course, all the details will be up on our site. We'll be learning a bit about the Oscars next, but to take you there, this is Georgia Mulligan's White Lies on 2SER.
I have certain beliefs.
Georgia Mulligan's White Lies on 2SER. This is So Hot Right Now for your Saturday, bringing you arts and culture and all the good stuff for your morning. And next we have some Oscar buzz with our favorite resident geeks, Blake Howard and Sophie Lai.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks with
Blake Howard
and Sophie Lai.
Good morning, Blake Howard of Graffiti with Punctuation.
Good morning, Soph. Good morning, geeks. Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday. Happy Oscars week.
Happy Oscars week. Look, it's been a big week. I know that every possible person has probably given you their 2 cents about the Oscars, but wait.
Because Blake is a film critic, so he too must give his take.
Here we go.
We thought Three Billboards was just going to clear everything.
Yeah.
And, it didn't.
No, two things didn't happen. One, I wasn't on television last week. And number two, Three Billboards didn't win all the Oscars. No. So, the Oscars ended up being kind of predictable, but great. Yeah. I mean, look, there were a couple of... Let's put it right on front streets.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, Darkest Hour. Who gives a shit? It's like, and I'm a Winston Churchill like kind of guy, inspired by the real man. And so, and now starting to read more on him here does have a pretty questionable and sketchy past. But
don't all the politicians?
They all do. But Gary Oldman's performance in that film is not the best performance he's ever done by far, by like leaps and bounds. And it's the first time that I actually tweeted on the day, like, I hate Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, because they regret not giving it to him then, so they're giving it to him now. Darkest Hour is just like a baffling choice. But you know, a movie about being an outsider and being a weirdo that is kind of a love story between a woman and the creature of the Black Lagoon won Best Picture.
I know.
Isn't
that,
like,
that made me so happy.
Isn't it weird and wonderful that it was even in contention? Like, you know, Guillermo did an incredible job. And it's so dumb to try and talk objectively. Let's just talk subjectively. If you look at those candidates of what the best movie of the year was, it wasn't my favorite. So, speaking as a person, it wasn't my favorite. I don't think it's in the level of, say, like Get Out, or I don't think it's in the level of like Call Me By Your Name, which I was super impressed with, but it's a pretty great movie. It was a really tough category. There were a lot of great contenders there that a lot of people could argue. And yeah, so if you walk away semi-satisfied, I think you got to be pretty stoked with an Oscars.
Yeah, I mean, for me, my top contenders would have been, personally, subjectively, would have been Get Out and Shape of Water.
Yeah.
So I was glad it won, and I was just like, come on, you have a Mexican director winning with a genre film for Best Picture. That is so rare.
Yeah, it's rare. Like, but there's three Mexican directors out of 5 years have won. You know, Cuarón won, Alexander Iñárritu won, and then obviously Guillermo. And so cool that those guys are such, you know, are dominating in these sort of big... prestige pictures, as you might say, if you're a big sort of Hollywood aficionado. But at the end of the day, Frances McDormand won for a terrific performance in what's a deeply flawed film. Sam Rockwell won for a great performance in a deeply flawed film. Alison Janney, from all accounts, I haven't seen I, Tonya yet, but I hear she's terrific. So there's, you know, this is another one of the big categories. But there were a couple of great wins, with Jordan Peele winning for Best Original Screenplay for Get Out, which is amazing. Oh.
Just very, warms the heart.
Very heartwarming. Roger Deakins, after 14 years being nominated, lensing some of the greatest motion pictures that have ever been presented on a big screen, got an Oscar for Blade Runner 2049, which is just great. There were a couple of those where I was just like, yeah. And then there are some that are just like, meh. But every Oscars is like that. You can't always be over the moon with every single selection and everything. It's still overwhelmingly an old white votership. But I think what we're starting to see, even with a movie like Shape of Water being nominated, it's pretty incredible the way that the industry is changing. So I didn't have like a bad Oscars time at all, except to go, oh, wouldn't it have just been wonderful to see Get Out win? Like, can you even imagine what that would have been like?
Oh, it would have been beautiful.
I would have flipped my freaking lid. Like, and you you get this moment when they're about to announce, and you're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, is it going to be Get Out? Is it going to be Get Out? And no, it's not. But that's okay, because there's not a nicer and more sort of cinephile, deep, abiding lover of cinema than Guillermo del Toro. And for him to win both Best Director and to be associated with Best Picture, this pure piece of passion project cinema, then you got to be happy.
Mm.
And so I'm happy.
Well, but the thing is, you know, with the Oscars, it was also, we've got a lot of the Me Too and Time's Up movement coming there.
Yeah, fantastic.
And of course, people are a bit pissy with Kobe and Gary Oldman winning.
Yep. Kobe Bryant. You know what? Look, this is what I, you know, firstly, let's talk about the shitty stuff. Mm-hmm. These guys are convicted for pretty nasty stuff to do with women and they're getting standing ovations. Gary Oldman, some really questionable shit he's said in the past, some weird stuff. Some stuff he's said that I think has been brutally taken out of context, but actually actions are the more gnarly things around the Gary Oldman piece, which are significant, which is he's a wife abuser.
Yeah.
And so outside of all of the BS around, you know, taking dumb quotes from dumb interviews about Mel Gibson 10 years ago,
yeah.
I think this is some pretty weird stuff. And so, you know, I think Hollywood is just a reflection of contradictory actions in the public eye, because people do this all the time.
Yep.
Like they're so hard on one thing, and then, you know, half the people in that room signed a petition for Roman Polanski to come back into the country and not be arrested, even though he drugged and sodomized a 13-year-old girl.
It's just beyond. And even... And, like, while the girl herself has said, like, just let him back in the country, she's just said that because so she can, like, just, she's had enough of it because it's hounded her whole life.
Yeah.
She will not say, she doesn't deny that he raped her.
Yeah.
She's like, no, he raped me, but I'm just over this shit.
I'm over this shit. I don't want it to be a news item. So, yeah, look, it's, Hollywood aspires in the best and nice, with the best intentions to lead. And movies are empathy machines. Mm-hmm. You know, the great Roger Ebert used to say that. And so when you've got machines of empathy, they help open up perspectives and perhaps, you know, reach different people. So if you're, you know, if you're a deeply dark and troubled person, sometimes a movie can touch you and open up your perspectives if you're quite closed off or uneducated, because they just have that power, like the image, the sound, the performance. It says, it registers an emotional truth that other mediums would struggle to reach, because it's a synthesis of visual image, sound image, movement, time. So you get this amazing art form, which is why film critics and geeks like myself and Soph exist. It's because you get to talk about it and they register such power. So at the same time, they like to think that they can do all those things. They make really dumb, populist, bullshit decisions, and it's very contradictory.
But it's, you know, they didn't ask Casey Affleck to present this year.
Yeah.
Because of it, and yet they still will award Gary Oldman and Kobe Bryant. It's just beyond.
But I did one thing about the Kobe Bryant thing that I actually enjoyed, is that now just so many great memes of like Jean-Luc Godard, no Oscars, Kobe Bryant, one. Like the most incredible, like David Lynch, no Oscars, Kobe Bryant, one. Like some of the most influential and powerful and incredible filmmakers who've ever walked the face of the earth, zero Oscars, an NBA player, One. So Kobe wins again.
Wins. But coming out of that crappiness, Frances McDormand did call out for inclusion writers to Hollywood. And it's already starting to pay off, because Michael B. Jordan, his production company, Outliers, they are now including inclusion writers in all future projects.
That's great.
Coming out of that Frances McDormand speech.
Yeah, look, Frances is great. I mean, that was a massive highlight. And the inclusion writer was awesome, because immediately it's like, what is it on Twitter?
But people, it was so searching. Funny because everyone, it was actually silent because everyone's like, the hell's an inclusion writer? And I'm pretty sure only like Octavia Spencer and Jessica Chastain knew what it was, because they've been doing it for ages.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah, so there's people talk about writers, like they didn't know, you know, the silly examples, if you're a Wayne's World fan, is like, I want a bowl of M&Ms, but only brown ones. You know, like that. Yeah. That's in your rider. Part of your contract is the only way that you do a project is if, or you do a project or an interview or a show or whatever. Part of your rider, your contract says that you will have certain things prepared for you. And that's where you hear, everyone has heard of riders, crazy like Celine Dion riders or Cher or whatever, usually associated with big divas. But I think this is awesome because, you know, I think, you know, people like Frances McDormand, people like Reese Witherspoon, people like Jessica Chastain, like they're leading the way with like these powerful women in super influential positions in Hollywood who are not only talking the talk, but they're walking the walk. Like Reese Witherspoon has been in more movies in the last couple of years just to use her star power to get, you know, to get female filmmakers up and running, to get TV shows up and running, to get scripts off the ground, you know, incredible stuff. So yeah, like there's a lot of cool stuff going on. And Frances in the inclusion rider, at least it's now creating an amazing topic of conversation.
And the great thing is they're not forgetting their sisters of color through this. No. Unlike poor Emma Stone got a bit of a backlash for her little snide comment when she was presenting for Best Original Screenplay. She was like, and these are the nominees, the four men and Greta Gerwig. Which everyone's like, there are two men of color. They struggled just as hard.
Yeah, look, she was just doing the Natalie Portman, right?
Yeah, but Natalie Portman got it right because they were all white old men who were nominated.
Look, Emma Stone just failed slightly. She's all right.
She is. But it was also International Women's Day this week, so we'll be reviewing Jessica Jones next week for you guys, as well as Annihilation.
Yes. Lady-heavy sci-fi, lady-heavy superheroes. And look,
just ladies who are killing it.
Killing the game. Killing the game. Natalie Portman, five white guys, the last time you saw her, like throwing shade hard at an award ceremony. Now you can see her in what is a really ambitious and crazy sci-fi flick by a great director. So I'm excited.
Yeah. And I'm so excited to dig into Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones. As long as Iron Fist is anywhere near it.
Nope. He better keep his damn Iron Fist far, far, far away.
How funny would it be? Can you just imagine whatever his name, Finn, what's his face? No one cares, right? No one cares. Let's just be fair.
I just call him Loris now.
Whatever, Dumbo McDumbface, whatever his name is, just going like, just on the like producer's door of Jessica Jones. Guys, is there like any room for like Iron Fist in this?
Please.
Please.
Hi.
Go away. We've told you 100 times.
This is a quality show.
This is premiere content. Don't make us recast you with... who's an old actor that we can recast him with? I was going to say Walter Matthau, but he's dead. Yeah, let's recast him with Walter Matthau.
That'll do. He'll do a better job.
Weekend at Bernie style. Okay, guys, that's enough for Gaggle Geeks, I think. Well, someone's going to take us off air.
Bye!
That was Gaggle of Geeks with Blake Howard and Sophie Lai discussing some of the stuff going on at the Oscars, some of the films out. This is So Hot Right Now, your arts and culture show for Saturday. Up next, we'll be talking about Black Artist Connection, which is a collaboration that it helps early career First Peoples artists and curators to develop their creative and professional skills. But to take you there, this is a song called Pressure by an artist called Georgia June. This is her latest track, and they're going to be supporting Johnny Hunter at the Chippendale Hotel tonight with $10 tickets. So if you like this song, maybe head along and check it out. This is Pressure. I'm Sam Barron. Pressure from Georgia June on 2SER, playing at the Chippendale Hotel tonight. $10 entry. If you're interested, you can head along. And you're listening to So Hot Right Now. I'm Sam Barron, filling in for Sophie Lai. And 2018's bringing an amazing new program to the forefront of the arts community, Black Artists Connection. This collaboration between Performance Space and Mughalin Performing Arts invites early career First Peoples artists, curators, producers, and writers to develop their creative and professional skills. The banding together of these two arts practitioners enables up-and-coming creatives to develop connections with peers and leaders through workshops and meetings during the year. Joining us now to talk more about Black Artist Connection are Lisa Marie Siren, the co-artistic director at Mughalin Performing Arts, and Georgia Mokak, the program assistant at Performance Space. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Hello. And so Black Artist Connections is this collaboration between those two organizations. How would this alliance formed?
Well, we live in the same building.
It's so a good start.
Based at Carriageworks,
the resident companies at Carriageworks.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems all of the companies here, we all try and do something together at some point.
Yeah, right. And so it's going to be occurring over the duration of the year. What are some of the main events or highlights participants in the program can expect to be involved in?
So the program is sort of going to be spread over the course of four sort of intensive workshops. And they also align with Mughalin's masterclass this year and also our Performance Space Live Works Festival, which is our sort of big two-week annual festival of experimental art. But leading up to that, we'll also have lots of intensive workshops with ourselves as facilitators and also sort of a range of practitioners that will be our guest facilitators as well.
Right. And what kind of participants are you hoping to draw to this program?
Sorry, what was that one?
What kind of participants are you hoping to draw to this program? Who are you hoping to have?
Yeah, so it's aimed at all First Nations emerging artists, curators, producers, writers, who are sort of looking to expand on their sort of creative and professional skills through sort of mentorship and, having conversations with each other and,
So it's all about developing, you know, connections with this. Are there any like mentors or people in particular you're hoping to collaborate with?
There are, but we're still sort of developing the program because we're open to such a broad range of practitioners. We actually thought it was more important for our applicants to sort of navigate the direction of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Our call out closed on the 19th of March, so we're sort of going to wait to see what our potential participants want to gain from the program before we line up any official sort of guests.
And in terms of these kind of programs, how many sort of programs in the past have there been that have helped to develop First Nations people's, you know, artistic and creative skills? Like, where does this stand in sort of the history of that development?
Oh, there are lots available. We recently did one for a Mughalin event called Kurigraph. We did some workshops with we brought in a Blackfoot artist from Canada to run a week of workshops with emerging queer artists. And I think last year with Performance Space, what was the one on Cockatoo Island? Performance Space are known for this kind of development. We do a lot of development also with our Yanamundi Playwriting Festival. It's something that both our companies do very well. And both our companies have a good history of and success with these development programs. And ultimately, our vision is to create platforms for First Nation stories and presentations.
Now, obviously, it's made for the writers and directors and creatives, but you must get something out of it as well. What do you really enjoy about running this program and taking part in it?
It's about creating an ecology and a sustainable, resilient sector. So you can't just run around thinking that you're the only one making work. This type of work is collaborative. You always need people of various skills and experience, and you've got to keep feeding back to that ecology as part of your daily practice.
Right. And again, this is the inaugural Black Artist Connection. What do you like? How do you know you have your four workshops set up, and you're still kind of waiting to confirm everything once you've finished your call out? But what are you most excited about for this program?
I guess I'm an emerging arts worker as well. I'm just sort of really excited to sort of meet some new First Nations creatives and sort of exchange that knowledge and develop together.
It's also about making culturally safe spaces for people to explore their practice. With Aboriginal culture or First Peoples culture, it's all about intergenerational knowledge sharing. So we're just trying to create those contexts for that work and those artists to develop their craft in. Mm.
All right. Well, that's really exciting. We'll have to see what comes out of it and, you know, some of the great experiences that you have. Thanks so much for joining us this morning to have a chat about it.
Thank you so much. So if you want to do this program, contact Performance Space and look out on Facebook.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because it was open till the, say, 19th of March?
19th.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll put some details up on our website as well. Thanks so much. All right. Have a great day.
You too.
And that was Lisa Marie Siren from the Mughalin Performing Arts and Georgia Mokak from Performance Space talking about Black Artists Connection. If you'd like to apply, the applications close at midnight on the March the 19th. We'll have all the info up on our website on 2SCR. And so hot right now. It's about 40 minutes past 11 here on the show. I'm going to keep going with a bit of good music now, and then we're going to have a chat with Flight Path, which is a work that's going to be about the world's most prestigious university and the world's largest slum together. So we'll learn a bit more about that in just a moment. But for now, this is 2SER, and I am Sam Barron filling in for Sophie Lai.
Everything is recorded. The debut album from Richard Russell, the producer of Gil Scott-Heron and Bobby Womack. A collaborative artist project, Everything is Recorded features Sampa, Kamasi Washington, Damon Albarn, Giggs, Ibei, Wiki, Green Gartside, Peter Gabriel, and more. Everything is Recorded by Richard Russell is out now on CD, vinyl, and all digital services. Brought to you by Remote Control, 2SCR sponsors.
You got yourself a bunch of bad habits. Not hard to see that love is a weakness. Seems to me the way you understand it is that you're never gonna make it happen. I get smoke in my eyes every time I try to look you in the eye. And do I even know what your face looks like? It's just the cloud of smoke in its place. I'm trying to tell you something. We'll be right back.
So Lucy Dacus there with Strange Torpedo on So Hot Right Now, arts and culture for your Saturday morning on 2SER. I'm Sam Barron, and this Thursday, theatergoers are going to be plunged into the world's most prestigious university and the world's largest slum together in the show Flight Paths. It's going to be playing at the National Theater of Parramatta, written by award-winning playwright Julian Larnach. Joined now by Julian to tell us a bit more. Good morning, Julian. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. So Flight Paths is connecting Kenya, UK, and Australia. Can you tell us a bit more about your narrative traveling through the world?
I guess it's trying to, I'm really interested in stuff we don't usually see on Australian stages, and one of those is a global perspective, I guess, and sort of one of the ways, two of the ways Australians interact with the world, especially young Australians, is through education and through aid work. And we see one girl go off to university at Oxford, and then we go see another young woman volunteer in Kenya. So it sort of starts off there, and there's a week in both their lives.
So this global perspective, you said that it's often lacking from Australian theatre. What interests you so much about that?
I think just sort of the world, I feel. I think the stage is a great place to sort of reinsert humanity into discussions. And I think some of the bigger problems in the world right now could be solved by putting humans in a room and actually listening to it. So I think... having an examination of the privilege that underlies education and looking at sort of the corruption underneath NGOs, which kind of, you know, rather than putting it in an article or putting it in a podcast, actually just putting it on stage and surrounding it with jokes might be a nice way to start a discussion.
Absolutely. So again, this sort of exploring world charity and privilege, how do you actually explore those on the stage in a way that isn't, like you said, using humor, but how do you explore it in a way that isn't really sort of cringeworthy or just sort of like blasé and just like, oh, okay, I see charity's a problem?
Yeah, I think it's sort of the pursuit of a playwright is trying to find yourself in every one of those characters. And I think as long as I'm not really settling on one side of the issue, I think it's just about sort of, rather than providing answers, more about provoking questions and sort of attaching that to a story and attaching that to characters rather than sort of, you know, big speeches and hearing the playwright. So I think, it's been nice in rehearsals over the last couple of weeks and just sort of seeing the script get pared back and sort of just sort of hearing the silences and letting those sort of uncomfortable truths sort of sit there with an audience, with characters, and then not really providing a way out. So hopefully people think about it when they leave.
Right. And do you feel, is it just so following through the stories of these characters? Is there any sort of other sort of theatrical elements that you are happy to like kind of experiment with in this piece?
Well, I think it's kind of one of the things that theatre can do, which I don't think any other form does as well, is sort of simultaneity and looking at sort of juxtaposition of things next to each other. So we've got those two storylines running side by side, and I think it urges the audience to sort of find the resonances between these two very distant worlds, and sort of even though the in is through two Australian characters in both these very different worlds, I think... it sort of allows the metaphor to speak for itself a bit, which is kind of fun.
And how are we meant to feel when we watch this? Is it sort of like one of those, well, you said you use humor, obviously, so are there those kind of uncomfortable moments where you're forced to sit with it and then you kind of have the humor to kind of like remind them that it's okay, that, you know, they're still here and they can still watch without like feeling horrible?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things of, I started writing the play when I was resident playwright at the Australian Theatre for Young People, and I was really obsessed with genre at the time and sort of latched onto the coming of age story and how often the coming of age story, the sort of passage of that is a character coming to terms with a different world. So sort of, it's sort of really two coming of age stories, but into those worlds of privilege and that world of corruption. So as these characters learn about this stuff and form their opinions, the audience is learning at the same time. So yeah, it's kind of an introductory course to all that stuff, but also I just really like making people dance on stage and having a lot of movement and having a lot of music. So that's sort of been fun to see come to life.
So now hold up. This has lots of dancing and music in it as well. So is that part of the whole thing? Is it actually secretly a musical?
Oh, the dream is to write a musical one day, but no, there's sort of, since one of the girls, her trip to Oxford, it's sort of during her orientation week at university. So there are a lot of balls, there are a lot of pubs, there are a lot of sort of drunken and heartfelt conversations. So I think just sort of finding a way to put my university on experience on stage, which was largely extracurricular, I'm afraid. But yeah.
So you just snuck in some of your favorite things as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously travel is like a big thing that, you know, is a big part of the mentality, especially for young people, you know, flying all over the world, interacting with stuff. Do you sort of have any, like, you know, opinions or comments on that? Because, I mean, it's called Flight Path. So obviously there's, you know, some sort of connection to that in the play. Is that sort of another sort of issue you look at, like how people interact with the places they travel to?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sort of looking at who does get to travel in this world. And I think it's just sort of a rite of passage in an Australian context to just sort of travel overseas, and you become yourself by sort of finding out about other places. And I think it sort of puts these Australian characters up against people who are either much more mobile or much less mobile in that world.
All right. Well, it sounds like a very interesting performance. Thanks very much for joining us this morning to tell us a bit more about what we might expect.
No, totally. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And that was Julian Larnach, a playwright who is talking about Flight Path, his play, which will be put on at the National Theatre of Parramatta starting this Thursday. We'll put the details up on our site for So Hot Right Now, where you can find out more about it yourself as well and check it out and maybe go see it if it sounds like something you'd be interested in too. Also, we've been promised some music, dancing, and humor, so it's bound to be a very good time. It's about 6 minutes to 10 here, 12 rather, on 2SER, but we're not quite done yet. Here is a track from Sarah Blasco on the So Hot Right Now. I'm Sam Barron. Like I wore a disguise. Sarah Blasco, Better With You on TSCR. This is So Hot Right Now. I'm Sam Barron. I've been filling in for Sophie Lai, but we're coming to the end of the program for this morning before I hand you off to Paul Goh for the afternoon with Playback, some beautiful music for your Saturday afternoon. I'd just like to thank my producers, Nicole and Lakshmi, for a wonderful job, and also all the guests we had on the program today. You can check out So Hot Right Now again next week, and at the same time, 11 to 12 on Saturday, for more arts and culture and what's going on around Sydney and Greater Sydney and everywhere. All the best here on 2SER. I'm going to leave you now with a track from Sampa the Great, and I'll catch you next week.
Belle and Sebastian, how to solve our human problems. Belle and Sebastian's How to Solve Our Human Problems is out now on CD, all digital services, and limited edition boxed vinyl. See Belle and Sebastian perform the new songs and old favourites at the Sydney Opera House May 5th. Brought to you by Remote Control, 2SER sponsors.
Again, looking at the mirror, making sure it's all the same. Has it been a year, making sure I understand that I'm looking here in the prison where I am. Breathe, cheers to the lonely sessions. Cheers to the time they turn to confessions. When you write your fears and hopes on the paper, music is the way I acknowledge the maker. Fortunately, it's my art. What you listen to is my heart. I probably lose heart cause I shed so much. I probably lose friends cause I care about my people more than cashing out stars. Peace to the ones on my side as my eagles. Peace to the ones bridging gaps of the people. No, my strength don't come from the evil. I've seen shines from my heart. Cause I am me. From the day I started to the day I departed, all that I want to be. I am me. From the day I started to the day I departed, all that I want to be. I am me. I ain't going nowhere. I ain't going nowhere. It's all that I want to be. I am me. I ain't going nowhere. Greater than a pot of gold, greater cause of heart and soul, greater in the end for the lessons I know, greater for the strength that I see I hold, greater than the eye, I see deeper than the eye, glitter in gold, not eye, wondering why, now I really understand why, music is still my life, yes it's the way that I...